Okay, so hello and welcome back to the Dentistry Online podcast. I'm here today with Omkar Mudda, and we are going to be talking about his foundation year in dentistry. But before we start, how's everything been with you so far this year? Obviously, it's been a bit unexpected. I can imagine you didn't expect your first year to have panned out as it has. But yeah, how's it been?
Yeah, hi Gabby. It's been a bit of an odd year, I'd say. Obviously, when you leave uni, you had this sort of like goal or sort of like vision of yourself 1 year from graduation, and I think everyone always has like a plan. Especially I think dentists, we like to plan stuff to like almost perfection. And I think when something like COVID comes around, something you don't ever expect to come around, that really turns everything upside down. It's a bit of a nightmare, but then you've got to keep things in perspective, don't you? And realize that we've all tried to keep safe, and it's for our patients and for us as well. But it's been odd, but kind of getting through it, Gabby, kind of getting through it.
That's all you can do, I think, really. How was it disrupted? What have you had to do differently in order to sort of
adjust
to the climate? What was that, as you say, a lot?
A lot different. So when we first started, like, our foundation training year is like really similar to the junior doctor's F1 year. So it's like an NHS post. You've got a lot of security from like senior staff. You have a trainer at work who's like your tutor, basically. So when we started, things were super, super well organized, because it's like a system. Like, yeah. Foundation training's been going on for so long, so it's like a if it ain't broke, don't fix it kind of thing. And I was really enjoying it. I mean, I'm based in Essex, as you know, we had a little discussion. I'm in Brentwood, where they filmed that show. I won't name any names of that show, but I'm in Brentwood and I love it. And basically, COVID affected it because you just can't see your patients, can you? And the main part of being a foundation trainee is getting as much exposure as you can to a variety of patients. And when that gets taken away from you and you can't see your patients, you're not a dentist anymore, are you? So that was the main issue, yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay. And you mentioned previously that you did some sort of some donations. There was a lot of work that you did at the beginning to sort of help out the efforts of the UK. What was it that you did exactly?
Yeah, so I was basically, as a foundation trainee, we were kind of told that we'd have certain options of what we could do. So from working, obviously, you know, 9 to 5 every day, and then things being so regular and getting into the flow of dentistry. And by March time, I was feeling quite confident in my clinical ability, and like, you just feel a bit more at ease. You're not like, you know, you're now 6 months into your training year, you feel a bit more confident. And then we were basically told we can't see patients anymore. And I was basically either allowed to stay in practice and help out on the telephones and telephone triage, like most of my colleagues have been doing. And I was also able to put my name into like a hat to volunteer for redeployment in a hospital setting. So that was like, we were kind of toing and froing between that for a long time. When we didn't really hear back quite quickly in regards to the deployment, because they had so many members of staff that they could utilize before they utilized us, I just thought, what can I do to help out? Because I was sat at home and I was looking at all the doctors and nurses and frontline staff that were talking about how few resources they had in regards to PPE and stuff, and especially care homes as well. I live with my grandma, who's quite elderly, and like, I would hate to think if she was in a care home, like they wouldn't have PPE, the staff, you know? So I work with an amazing group. I work alongside dental training consultants, and Dr. Shivana and Dr. Zahid, the co-founders, we all like kind of bunched up and we thought, what can we do to like help these frontliners and care home staff out? So it was a bit crazy, Gabby. We literally were on the laptops all hours of the day, but like emailing and just calling people, like loads of different companies, like big pharmaceutical companies, people like GSK and people like companies like Cetaphil, and I rang the Boots headquarters and all these just random people. And obviously, like, you have 20 people that say no, but for every 20 that say no, we have about 5 that said yes. So we called a lot of people, yeah. And it was really intense, but really worth it.
Uh-huh. So what was the result of it? So, I mean, like you said, you had to sort of plow through loads of names and sort of deal with the fact that a lot of them were saying no. But for those who said yes, how were they helping?
So we were able to organize a few things, essentially. The first thing we wanted to help out was oral care packages. Obviously, within the hospitals, essentially, a lot of patients on COVID wards or on respirators or whatever, they kind of suffer with dry mouth, and you know, oral care sometimes gets put on a backseat. So what we wanted to do was we first organized oral care packages with GSK, which was amazing. So things like mouthwash, toothbrushes, toothpaste, just the usual interdental brushes. And these were sent out amongst hospitals in London. We got 1,000 care packages sent out there, which was amazing. Loads of different products that really helped those patients in need. We also were able to get large donations of hand soap and hand sanitizer and cleansers from Cetaphil, the company that they make like skincare products. So I got in touch with them and they were really generous. Like, they sent a massive donation to my house and it came straight to my house. And basically I was at home one day and I got a call from the lady who helped us, and me and my dad was at home and my mom was at home, and this massive truck pulled up and I was like, that is not your Waitrose online shop, because I don't know what you guys have ordered if it's come in a massive industrial truck. And then next thing you know, they pull out these two massive crates of Cetaphil, and I was like, wow, like, you know, the generosity was crazy, but I was like, how am I going to lift this all up now?
Where did you end up storing them? Did you have enough room?
Yeah, so we have a shed in the garden and we have our garage. So like that was all good. But like when it first came on these massive crates, me and my dad were like, how are we going to lift these up? Like, that's a lot of Cetaphil. So with the Cetaphil, I managed to get that donated in the east. So I'm in Essex, like I've said many times now. I was able to get that sent out in the east of England area, so like Basildon Hospital, Broomfields. A few of my friends are oral surgeons in those areas, so I think it's like just using your contacts as well and ringing people up, like, I've got donations for you guys if you need them. And a lot of hospitals really did need them. That was one. And then obviously with that, we were able to send some of those donations back into London, which was brilliant. Burt's Beeswax, a bit of a random one, but they were just so generous, giving us like loads of lip balm, loads of cream, loads of sanitizer. And like, obviously when you sanitize throughout the day, your hands get so dry and your skin gets so dry, and the FFP3 dries out your lips and your nose. And they sent us a lot of products. They sent us just so many. And they were also kind enough to send care packages directly from their HQ to 10 hospitals that we were able to pick. And it was just random hospitals across London and Essex. It was just really nice that was just to name a few, but you know, so many people came through and really helped the cause. And it was lovely to see, you know, that everyone just kind of helped each other. And I think that was really something that I won't forget. It was like people just was making a team effort, and I really, really like being a part of that.
Yeah, I bet. And I think even though, you know, as we said earlier, your first year, your foundation training's been disrupted, as everybody's has, it shows that you've still managed to sort of utilize the time and do something worthwhile. You know, and that's quite nice to know that you're able to come together with people and make a difference in a way that you perhaps weren't expecting to, but you know, you played your part.
No, we really weren't. And I think like even I was talking to one of the reps I know at Colgate, who really lovely, and I just said to her, I'm in a bit of a pickle, like we need some toothpaste donations for care homes in the area. And within a week I had a massive box of toothpaste at my house. And it's just nice to know that you can actually ask people and they, you know, if they can, they will help. And I think that's what it showed, that it was just really refreshing to see people just pull together whatever resources they could. And those Colgate samples and all those toothpaste, again, like, was able to get those sent out to one of my friends who works in Hertfordshire, actually.
Okay.
And she's an oral surgeon there. And then I've also got in touch with the Dental Wellness Trust, because they put like a post on Instagram saying we need toothpaste donations.
Uh-huh.
And got straight in touch with them and said, look, I've got an Instagram story, like, I've got this massive donation. And they were happy to take those and then send those to care homes as well. So it was nice just to be part of a team, you know, and I really liked that.
Definitely. I mean, rewinding slightly, obviously you, as we spoke about prior to this, we worked out, we both went to King's.
Yes.
So how, do you want to tell me a little bit about sort of your journey into dentistry? Because, you know, the more I've been speaking to people, the more I've realised nobody's journey into dentistry is the same. They can all be very different and varied. How did you, you know, where did your interest come from, and how did you end up completing your 5 years at King's?
Yeah, so hashtag forever King's, me and you. Hashtag bleed red. No, it was, King's was like always with me, dentistry was, it was always an interest. I was very torn between medicine and dentistry. I wasn't one of those kids at school that was always wanting to do dentistry. You know, some people know from day one they want to do some kind of degree or some kind of job. For me, I was always torn between the two. My interest kind of stemmed from just generally enjoying science and wanting to help people. And then my dad's a dentist, and he's always been an inspiration growing up to me. And you know, like, when you have a parent who does a job and they love their job, and they come home and they're excited about tomorrow and they've just got home, you're like, can't be that bad. So I shadowed my dad a few times, and then I also wanted to keep my options a little bit open. So this is like when I was like 14, 15, I was trying to think, like, what am I good at? I'm good at science, I'm good at art, I'm good at graphic design, and I'm good at those kind of subjects. So science and creativity were things that I really enjoyed. And that dentistry kind of like combines the science and the artistic side, and then it's just fun. I enjoyed when I was shadowing a lot of people when I was 16, when you've got to do work experience when you're at school. And if you remember, they give you that little diary and you've got to like write everything in my 2-week work experience log in year 11. So when I did that, I was planning to do it at a shoe shop because I wanted to get a discount I think it was at Office in Bluewater. And I basically wanted to do the 2-week work experience. I wanted to do the 2-week work experience to buy a new pair of Vans and get a discount on them. So they kind of foiled my plan. And I was like, you know what, maybe I should actually go to a dental surgery. Maybe I should do something a bit more proactive. I should try and just not get discounted Vans. I should do something that I actually want to consider. So I organized some stuff within a GP practice and a dental surgery. And I just, at that moment, I just really enjoyed the dental side of things, you know. That's safe to say, I didn't stop the medicine experience then and there. I also did some work experience in the hospital, and that was just me watching, you know, the doctors on their rounds, doing some admin work, things like that. And that's when I think I realized, like, the medicine lifestyle was quite intense.
Yes.
Especially the uni lifestyle. And like, I think after finishing uni, after medicine, those first few years as a junior doctor, you've really got to be dedicated to the cause, and you've really got to love medicine. And I think for me, when I was applying for uni, it was at that point, it was quite clear after the work experience I'd done, dentistry was the one.
Okay. And then, so you, obviously, when did you start at King's? What year was this?
So I started King's in 2014. September 2014. I took a gap year before. So 2013, I make no secret of the story, like, because I think it's important to tell. I think in dentistry, like, especially on social media, like, you can really get caught in the madness of it all and think, like, Dentist X is posting such lovely work and Dentist X's work looks so good. But you need to remember, Dentist X qualified in 2004.
Yeah.
And like, we qualified in like 2019. So like, you know, people have like 10, 12, 15 or so years of experience under their belt. Yeah. And we're comparing our work with them, which is great to use as like a benchmark. But I think you need to also realize, like, there is time, you know, taken to develop those skills. So yeah, make no secret of the journey. And I applied for the first time in 2013 and I got rejections from all of my dental schools. Dentistry is super competitive, as I'm sure you know, and I'm sure I know firsthand. I got 4 rejections off the bat. I had 1 interview at King's and I was just so nervous. And because I was so nervous, I just built it up in my head so much that when it got to the interview, I just forgot how to talk.
Yeah.
Like I was trying to open my mouth and nothing would come out. It was quite funny. Looking back, it was quite funny. It was quite learning.
At the time. Yeah. It wasn't funny, yeah.
At the time, it wasn't funny. Like, you know, when you're in the interview and it's like, I felt like I was in a dream because I was so nervous. I wasn't listening to their questions and like, I was missing things out. But when I got the rejection, I realized like, okay, cool. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a gap year. I'm going to have to really reapproach this in a different way. And that's what I did. And I reapplied the following year. I had to resit a few exams and A-levels because I didn't get my grades as well. So I complicated my whole application because I didn't get my grades. And I think that is all because of the stress I put on myself.
Yeah.
But I think it's relatively normal because a lot of people do stress themselves in sixth form, you know, especially when you apply for a degree that needs like a certain level of grades or anything with an offer, you know, it was a lot of stress for me at that time. And then to answer your question, yeah, I reapplied, did my gap year, got all my offers in my gap year. And I think that was because I just went in it with a different mindset. I was just trying to be a lot more positive and think like whatever happens, happens now for the best, you know. And I don't know if anyone in that position is listening to the podcast. I hope someone is. But if there's anyone out there who's applied once, applied twice, isn't getting in, no, don't let anyone ever tell you no, that you won't get into dental school, because you will, regardless of like where you go or if you do the postgrad route or it takes you a few extra years. I feel like if you want to do something and you know you want to do it, you should never take no.
Yeah. No, yeah. I completely agree with you. And I think, like you said, you make no secret of your story. It's good to talk about these kinds of things because a lot of the time, we're expected to do things right the first time, you know, particularly young people, and especially when you're, you know, late teens, you're doing your A-levels and you see everybody around you going somewhere and getting into their chosen courses. And you can get really, you know, it can knock you back. It can make you feel really sort of inadequate and it's very easy to give up. So I understand why people do. But then, you know, your testament to, if you just keep going, it can work out. And I think things like that need to be talked about more, because I think in the particularly things like social media, people splash about things online, and it can take a toll on those who don't get things first time. So yeah, your story is an inspirational one, I think.
Yeah, no, and I think like when I was in sixth form, all of my friends at the time as well were applying for really competitive degrees and they were all getting their offers. So like they would get an email from UCAS and be like, something has changed. That dreaded UCAS track email, your track has changed. And then they would log in and they'd be like, you've got an offer. And I would log in and it'd be like, you've had a rejection. And it was like hard competing with friends that were getting offers for everything and I was getting rejections. And then it puts you in that mind frame where you think I'm not good enough. And then, do you know what, it's funny because even though I applied the following year, when I got those offers, I still had that little bit of imposter syndrome, being like, I got rejected a year ago and now I've got these offers.
Uh-huh.
Will I actually be good enough when I get to uni? And I know a lot of people that gap year or missed their grades the first time actually felt the same. And I think we need to kind of abolish that mind frame, because it's not a healthy way to think, but every learning curve I think makes you a bit more grateful. And that gap year was one of the best years I had. Like, it made me so grateful for just my place in dental school. And I think it also made me really grateful for the fact that I knew now I wanted to be a dentist, because I had taken another year out. It just kind of solidified that sort of like, I want to do this now. And 2014 I started and I had like the best 5 years. And do you know what, the gap year didn't make a difference at all. It just made me more grateful, you know.
They don't. And I think, I mean, I personally, anybody who I speak to who is at the age where they're thinking about going to university, my advice always, and I know everybody's different, I'm not, you know, saying one This will work for everybody, but I took 2 years out. I was working. So when I went into and started my degree, I was an early birthday as well. So obviously I just turned 21. So, and there were some people who just turned 18, and you think that it's going to have a massive, and you're going to feel different and like an outcast, and you don't. And like you said, you appreciate the degree more. You can use the experience from the years out or year out. And I think it just helps you grow as a person. I think sometimes taking yourself out of the sort of academic environment can really sort of tell you what you want. And it can either show you that actually maybe you don't want to go to university, or it can really show you that actually that is what you want to do. And that was, that's what it did for you. It just sort of.
Yeah, it did. Like, I agree with you. Like, we both took gap years or years out, whatever. And I think, yeah, for me, it just solidified the approach. And it was like, I want to go to King's. I want to be a dentist. Like, there's no other. And if I have to like, I remember I was actually at an interview for a different dental school in the country. And they asked me, like, what, one of the questions randomly was, what would you do if you don't get in? And I was like, oh, what a lovely question. What an interesting. I was like, what do you mean if I don't get in your dental school, or I don't get, like, I fail my A-levels? And then the person asking the question was, if you miss your grades and you don't get your offers and you don't get into dental school, what would you do? And I was like, oh, wow. The irony of that statement is actually, yeah, I did my grades last year. I'm on a gap year now, and I'm just proving my dedication because I'm here at an interview and I want to do it. And, you know, failure happened to me last year. It didn't scare me or put me off. I'm going to keep applying for it. And this is the end goal. And you know, when you answer the question, they look at you like, good answer. I was like, yes, I knew. And I was like, if it happens again, I'll just apply again next year and you'll see me here again next year.
just drop the mic, walk out the room.
Yeah, no. But that was honestly that, I remember that really clearly, because that was like one of those moments when you think, wow, like, I, you know, it's the confidence levels as well that just grow, you know, because I felt like an adult now. I wasn't at school. I wasn't bound to any teachers. I was working different jobs. I was going on to interviews. Like, I was doing things on my own, making my own money. And I felt like an adult. Yeah. I think that's what's important. I didn't feel like a kid anymore. And I think that is why I loved my gap year.
Yeah, yeah, I completely agree with you. And I do think they're massively beneficial. Even if you, you know, even if you hit the grades, I think like I said, I'm not suggesting this is the same for everybody, but I do think it can put, if you're feeling a little bit overwhelmed, I think it can put things into perspective. But I mean, prior to, obviously, you started your foundation year last September, so it's kind of a year now. So let's forget this year for a minute and focus on the pre-COVID months. How did you find the transition from dental school to your foundation year?
Yeah, no, that's a really, I get that question a lot from people who are in like fifth year or fourth year, and they message me on Insta and they're like, I'm really nervous about the transition. I feel like I'm a bit biased to King's because I love King's, but the training was really good. And I had a lot of patient experience with undergraduate training. So when I went into uni, having only had 5 weeks off for summer or whatever, I didn't feel like nervous as per se. The transition was intense in regards to, you're now there. My practice is 8 to 5, not 9 to 5. So like, a lot of my friends are 9 to 5. We have an extra hour, but it didn't really make anything up. In the grand scheme of things, it's fine. But the transition was difficult managing working life. I think that was the hardest thing. Like 8 to 5, Monday to Friday, you know, you're in charge of your own admin now. Like, there's no one to fall back on. It's all on you. And initially, the first month was quite hard because you go from seeing like 2 patients or 3 patients a day at uni to like 10, you know, 10 or 12. And then you're really the one who's making those decisions. And I found that harder than the practical stuff itself, like doing a filling or doing a root canal. That stuff didn't stress me out because I had loads of experience at uni. Like, thankfully, I know not a lot of people have, you can't like standardize experience through the dental schools in England, but I felt like uni gave me so much good experience. The major sort of stress factor that I had, and the hardest thing that I found to adjust to, was going from like 3 patients to 12 and then being in charge of everything. Okay. You know, that was what I found quite difficult.
Yeah, I can imagine that is a big jump. How did you overcome that? How is this something that you dealt with? Because obviously, like you said, you went from sort of having some help if you needed it at dental school. But here, you know, this is real life, and these are real people coming through the doors that you have to deal with by yourself. How did you overcome this sort of increase in patient numbers?
It was like the first, I feel like riding a bike, you know, the first few times are a little bit stressful. And then like the first month was really stressful. And then you just need to like realize, okay, this is the times that it takes me to do a filling. This is the time that it takes me to do a root canal, whatever, whatever. And then basically once you've got your routine sorted, and I think it does take a month to find your feet. Once I had found my feet a bit, and I also have, obviously, when you're a foundation trainee, you have a supervisor, and the supervisor is there for you to call upon if you need them. And if you're stuck with something or you don't know something, you can just get them to come in for a second opinion. And my supervisor's been so helpful the whole time throughout my foundation training. I can't fault her. She's been brilliant. And she made the transition super easy for me as well, because whenever I had any queries or concerns, I would just message her and she'd literally pop in the room within 2 seconds. And I've been quite blessed with her approach as well, because she really helped me. I feel like I needed a bit of maternal teaching. You know, when you sometimes people like to be independent learners and they don't want their trainer to always be there. I needed someone to just show me things, you know, in a sort of,
I know what you mean.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like in a more gentler manner. Like sometimes I get, when someone tells me to do something independently, I can get a bit stressed sometimes. But when I've got someone to kind of show me the steps in a more gentler manner, I learn more from it. And those first six weeks, when I was a bit overwhelmed, yeah, she really just showed me the way of how to manage these situations. Yeah.
That's good. I think, a lot of the time, you know, having a solid team behind you and support and mentoring is very important, I think, particularly in dentistry.
Yeah, for sure.
What other obstacles? So, I mean, is there anything, if pretend I'm a fifth year student now about to come out, what advice would you give to me? Obviously, I mean, I know it's easier said than done, but maybe forget COVID. If we can, just general advice, maybe outside of the sort of, yeah, COVID climate, what would you say to new graduates who are about to sort of embark on the same year?
I think like it's really important to, obviously, like we say, not hold yourself in competition with people you see on social media. Remember, they have so much experience. Use them as a benchmark and use them as inspiration, but don't feel like your work doesn't look like their work and therefore you're not a good clinician. That's not fair on you. Number two is, unfortunately, not everyone's going to like you in regards to patients or whatever. You're going to get difficult patients and difficult days where you just feel like everything's going wrong. Again, it's not a reflection on you. It's just sometimes we all have days that are just awful, you know. I can't tell you the days that I've had when I wanted to just walk out the surgery and be like, I'm done. Like, I'm done with this. I just want to be a YouTuber and I'm done. But you know what? It's fine. Like you need to have those bad days to appreciate the good days. And the bad days like give you reflection, right? You reflect on it and you learn from it. And like that is what's the most important thing of this year, is reflecting on your growth and how you've gotten better. So yeah, don't compare yourself too much. Don't worry about the difficult days and celebrate every success. Like I'm such a firm believer in celebrating every success. Like whether that filling just looked lovely or that root canal was perfect or your nurse made you a cup of tea and now she knows how you like, celebrate every success, because like we don't do that enough. Like dentists especially are always so hard on themselves. Like I broke a tooth when I was extracting it and it took me a bit longer, or the filling looked a bit bulky. Okay, like I understand they're things that bother us, but patients in the grand scheme of things are just happy to have a tooth back or happy to have a filling that looks somewhat lifelike. And I feel like we really do put ourselves on this pedestal of we need to be so perfect. And yeah, I understand that, I do get it, there's a bit of perfection, like perfectionist in every dentist, but you can make yourself ill like that sometimes, you know. You can make yourself, yeah, it's not good, especially when you've just come out of uni. So yeah, celebrate every success and don't be so hard on yourself. I think I've learned that this year, and sometimes it's a bit lame when I'll be like, oh, I did such a nice impression for that denture, it looks so good. But like when I think about myself 3 years ago in uni or 4 years ago doing my first denture, I couldn't even take an impression of someone's teeth, you know? So celebrate every success. It's really important to.
Yeah, 100%. And if you look back, like you just said, you look back at what you couldn't do six months, you know, previously, and what you can do now. And then you just like, look how far I've come. So those small successes that you're talking about, like you said, may seem quite trivial, may seem a bit silly sometimes, but they're important because it shows that you are moving forward. And, you know, you spoke about these dentists earlier who have been working for 10, 15, 20 years. You will get there. That will be you at some point. But right now, this is where you're at and this is what you're doing well. And yeah, no, I like that. That's good advice. I'm going to take it.
Like, I always talk to my friends and I'm like, imagine how we used to stress about giving an injection like 3-4 years ago. Like, our hands would shake giving the injection, going up there, you know, and now it's like second nature. You don't think about it. You don't think about loads of things anymore. And it's because it's just dentistry. A lot of dentistry, I feel like it's a lot of, you know, you need to do it a few times. Like any job, you know, you've got to do, a brain surgeon isn't a brain surgeon overnight, you know, take practice. And I feel like, you know, Lewis Hamilton didn't become the best driver overnight either. So it's just one of those things. You need to just give yourself a break sometimes and just realize practice does actually make perfect, especially with dentistry, I feel like.
Definitely. No, yeah. I like that. That's good advice. And like you said, too much stress isn't good for any of us. And especially at the moment, you know, we just everyone needs to get a break, I think. So no, I like that.
Especially in COVID with this hot weather, you can't stress and sweat too much. It's too much.
I feel so sorry for you guys with the PPE. I don't know, particularly these last few days have been another level of warmth. Yeah. So I'm not going to say I hope the sun goes, because I don't.
But no, I don't either.
33 degrees in England is not my favourite. I will say that.
with no aircon, it's a bit much.
Exactly. Yeah. So moving away from dentistry for the final question. Obviously it's been the reason why we have this podcast is to talk primarily about dentistry and things to do with dentistry, but what do you like to do outside of it? Is there anything that interests you completely away from teeth and the practice?
Yeah, so like I've always loved teaching, like regardless of dentistry, whatever the subject may be, I've always loved teaching and tutoring and just trying to help people that are a bit younger than me. We've done maths and English tutoring, biology tutoring, and where I now work with dental training consultants, like helping the next generation of dentists secure their jobs. Teaching's a passion of mine. It's something that I want to pursue like long term. So that's something that I really enjoy doing outside of dentistry, always have done, I think always will do. And I think people can tell that from my Instagram. Like when I do my Insta stories, it's like me just talking through stuff, but I just love teaching. And I just think because, like, you know, Gabby, I'm sure you can relate, like when you're younger, whether it goes back to school days or whatever, you have certain teachers that scare you because they're not approachable. Like, and then you have teachers that you love because they're just on a level and they're just so nice. And you want to be there. Like when I was younger in school and I had teachers that I really looked up to, they were the ones that were just so nice and so approachable. And I would love to one day try and be that kind of like a teacher or like a clinical tutor for someone. And I would love for them to be like, I can ask Onka anything because he won't get mad that it's a dumb question. Because some teachers were like, no question's a dumb question. And then you have other teachers that would be like, what a silly question to ask. So you want to be the latter, I feel like, you know, and actually encourage growth and encourage learning. Yeah. That's one of the things that I'm passionate about and still am, always have been. And then I think one of my other passions that I really enjoy is I'm quite a coffee snob. Oh, I feel like you might know this from my Insta. Yeah, I'm kind of a coffee snob. I still drink instant at work, and you know, I love an espresso. I'm guilty of an espresso machine in my own house, but I love independent coffee shops and going around London and finding the best ones and reading the London Coffee Guide. And just like when I was in uni, I started like a coffee blog when I had a bit more time, and I would literally go around London and find the best coffee shops and review them on my old Instagram that now exists, but we won't talk about it because it's in the archive somewhere.
That's really nice. So you know, instant coffee still, but what makes it good?
Yeah, I can, but like that's because I have a caffeine problem. So like if I don't drink enough tea or coffee throughout the day, I will get a migraine or a headache. I think that is a problem, and maybe I should seek medical advice at some point. But Yeah, I'm not like a Red Bull junkie. I'm not like, I don't have Red Bull and stuff like that. But like teas and coffees, like I need to have like a tea in the morning, a tea at 11, a tea at 2, or a coffee.
Do you have a cutoff point when you're like, right, no more caffeine?
It doesn't affect me. That's the problem. So if I have like for example, if I go out and have an espresso martini with my dinner, or we go out for drinks and I have an espresso martini, it won't keep me up at night. My dad's the same. Like I think it's genetic, you know, because I can have an espresso at night and I won't be up. I can still sleep.
Do you think because you built up a really high tolerance of caffeine, or has it always been the case?
Maybe, I'm not sure, but I just love coffee, and like I don't judge. I still love an instant. I still do a Starbucks, you know. I love an iced caramel latte. Sometimes you just gotta be a little bit hashtag basic and go for the Starbucks. But no, I love it, and I'm excited to start my new, like my next job in London, because I'll be back in the coffee part of town. So yeah, I love coffee. I love teaching. I actually remember once when I was in school, I took a takeaway coffee into school. Like my mum and I were driving to school. I was like, mum, just pull up. I want to get a coffee. I was like 15. And my teacher made me not come in the room. And I was like, miss, why can't I come in the room? She's like, that's a hot drink. It's a hazard. I was like, I'm not going to spill it on anyone. Like I'm 15. I'm basically an adult. I can hold a cup. And I got sent out of the room, and I got put in like detention for having a hot coffee.
Do you know, I look back at some things from school and I think someone reminded me of this the other day, and they said, why weren't we allowed to chew gum in class?
Yeah, I know.
And I thought, you know what? That's, and as a dentist, you know, it's gum's beneficial, you know, sugar-free gum. It's a good way to clear your mouth out after a meal. I look back and I think there were some weird rules at school.
They used to sell Lucozade after PE and you couldn't chew gum.
No, makes no sense. Honestly, no sense. You know,
like once my phone got confiscated and they kept it for 48 hours. I swear that's illegal.
I would be happy about that. I would not be. Yeah. 48 hours is a long time.
They took my phone from they took my phone at like 11 o'clock on one day and didn't give it back till 3:30 the following day, which was like a full on nearly 2 days.
Not yeah. A fan of that. No, particularly if you've got to get home and your parents are calling you and you're like, well, I can't see you because I'm
crazy times, isn't it? It's so funny.
Yeah, so weird. But thank you very much for coming on today. It's been a
thank you for having me.